Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ali. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by Denise Salcedo. Hey, Denise.
What's up, Luke?
Right, let's dive straight into the show because we've got a big one. We actually get through all the mailbag questions this week, which is a nice change of pace. But we're kicking things off talking about Mustafa Ali's comments he made on Corey Graves' podcast recently. Are fans the wrong ones about retribution? Here's the show.
I'm doing awesome. And oh my God, I have to tell you, by the way, I've been getting so many DMs and emails from WrestleTalk viewers telling me that they love our show. And I'm so happy about that because every Friday I look forward to like people sending me like DMs of what they thought about the show. So I've been needing to mention that like the last few weeks. And I was like, this week, I got to remember to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. This is my favorite show to do of the week. We had that one week where people did not like us, Denise, because we had an opinion about AEW. But for the most part, people tend to really like this show.
I hope they came back. I hope the people that hated us that one. And it's still funny because that was still my favorite show.
I know. Same
here. I'm heartbroken.
Maybe people will be maybe a little bit on board with this one instead, because I think it's fair to say, you and I have actually talked about this on the show before, Retribution have not exactly been the hottest act. I don't think it's WWE's home run that they thought that it might have been. This sort of, basically, the ratings were down. So on a conference call, Vince said, hey, we've got these new plans. Those plans were Raw Underground and Retribution. We're going to debut this whole new concept and this new act that's going to like turn the tide. Turns out, actually, the Thunderdome was what they needed to kind of turn the tide of the ratings. Raw Underground's been dropped completely now. There's just no mention of it whatsoever. It's just gone, which I'm glad of because I thought it was terrible. But Retribution have hung around like a bad fart that follows you into the car. They
a bad fart.
Yeah, a bad fart that follows you into the car. They are still with us. And we have seen them lose. They're 0-4 in terms of their competition. They've lost against the Hurt Business consistently. The storyline is now the Hurt Business have rid WWE of Retribution and they're getting tag title shots off the back of it. But Retribution are still on the show. They're just in a much lower level feud now against Ricochet. However, Mustafa Ali was on Corey Graves' After the Bell podcast. And he says, and this is a long quote, so do bear with me. When talking about all the members, they've all had a moment taken away from them. Mace was doing great on Raw commentary. Brock puts him through a table and now he's done. He never came back. T-Bar was choked out by Karrion Kross and his best friend Keith Lee watched. And then Keith Lee goes up to the main roster, leaving Dijakovic with nothing. Mia Yim was taken out before War Games. The person who took her out was never reprimanded. We all have these stories about guys and girls who had something taken away from them and nothing happened. The sentiment of chip on your shoulder is very appropriate for Retribution. contribution. I went from a guy who was sitting at home for 7 months to a guy who now talks for 7 seconds. I know people love to poke fun at Slapjack and the Mask, but there's so much art in this story that I knew a lot was going to go over people's heads. Imagine having preconceived ideas about your name, about you because of your name and what you look like. Imagine being a guy named Mustafa Ali, renaming people so they can understand what it feels to be judged by your name and what you look like. You guys don't appreciate real art. Denise Salcedo, your thoughts?
Okay, so this is the first time I'm hearing this quote because I hadn't seen it earlier. And I'm just like, I feel bad for Mustafa Ali that he has to. I don't know if he's convincing himself to believe this nonsense. When he's okay, there's some good points that he made, obviously. And my assumption is that this was in character. Was it not? It was sort of in character, right?
I think it's partly in character, partly not, because he's also put out tweets as well saying that some of the things that he said was edited out of the podcast because WWE higher-ups didn't like what he had to say. So I don't know whether this is in character or if it's just... because Ali has always been this kind of guy on Twitter. Like, he's always been posting pictures of himself just hanging out backstage because he wasn't booked to do anything on the show.
Right, and so it's weird to me because, you know... I like the fact that he says, you know, because of my name, because of my skin color, this is the reason why somebody like me is not being pushed. And that is such a great aspect of that. But I find it hard to believe when he says that it's going over people's head because it's an art thing. And I'm like, the fact that it's going over pretty much as everybody's head should tell you that it's probably not working whatsoever. It's not necessarily about it being art. It's just the fact that it's not making sense. And the fact that you guys are losing every week and you're not giving us a reason to care about you. And that shouldn't be so complicated. And it shouldn't have to go over people's heads or not over people's heads. He's making it a little bit more complicated than I think it needs to be. If something is good, the people will know it and they will know it instantaneously.
Yeah, and I find it kind of a remarkable thing to have said that, you know, that a lot of this is going over people's heads when we have had so many like comments and super chats in on our Raw review who have pointed out these things that, you know, Dijak was left in NXT when Keith Lee went up and Dio Madden was on, you know, Raw commentary and was forgotten about. But it's not just our viewers that have noticed this, and we've talked about it on shows. You and Sean have mentioned this sort of stuff on your Fightful reviews. Guerrilla Position podcast, a WWE-endorsed podcast, Guerrilla Position have talked about this. Cultaholic have talked about this. Steven Larson have talked about this. Fans are very aware that this is Dio Madden, who was once a Raw commentator. This is Dominik Dijakovic, who was left down in NXT. It's Mia Yim, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is that's not the story that's being told on TV. That is the story that we as fans are putting onto this to try and make it make sense. The story on TV is that these are a group of lads who want to cause havoc. They're just guys. Mustafa Ali did that promo, I think it was on Raw Talk, where he was like, oh, I gave them bad names so they knew what it would be like to have a bad name on TV. And I'm like, no, they got given bad names because WWE Creative thought they were cool names. Like, that's the long and short of it.
A different type of bad.
Yeah, right? So, like, unfortunately, like, Ali's argument holds no water because there is a good kernel of an idea in Retribution. But that is not the idea we've got on TV.
No, I think he has a concept in mind and I like what he's going, what he wants to do with it. But yeah, That's not necessarily what WWE executives are actually portraying and what we're seeing on the screen. And you can't say, oh, it's going over people's heads, because one of the most over storylines in WWE right now, or in wrestling in general, and you can say it's not a complicated story, but it has a lot of layers to it. And that is the Jey Uso Roman Reigns storyline. So that's not going over people's heads. People are understanding that storyline. So it's interesting for me to hear him say this because I almost feel like he wants to believe otherwise. He wants to believe that this is supposed to be this groundbreaking thing about, you know, racial discrimination or whatever it is that he wants it to be. And I would love it to be that way. And I would love for Retribution to come across that way, but it's just not coming across that way whatsoever. And I want to see, I wish that I was into Retribution. Here's the thing is that when people like, you know, complain about things that they're seeing in wrestling, whether it be in WWE or AEW, necessarily, I know sometimes it feels like everyone's always complaining, but I know for me, speaking on for me, I don't want to hate everything, or I don't want to hate most of, you know, the things that I do hate. I don't want to hate those things. I want to be interested. I want to be invested, because the more invested that I am in something, it makes my job easier, not just as somebody who's talking about this, but as a fan. I don't want to feel like I'm watching something because it's a chore, or because I have to, or because I've been a dedicated fan for years. And so many people have said this, like, oh, it feels like a chore to watch Monday Night Raw. And I'm like, it shouldn't be that way. So we want to have something to root for. And so, yeah, this is, I feel Mustafa Ali's trying to convince himself otherwise on this one.
Yeah, I personally don't think that Mustafa Ali is going to be hanging around WWE. Once his contract is up, I feel like he is one of those guys that will be looking to go elsewhere. And I think quite rightly so, because I think he is so underutilized and has always been so underutilized in WWE. They've just pegged him as this small guy and have never given him the shots that I think he truly deserves. And when he eventually does leave WWE, he is going to have a fascinating podcast interview with Jericho or whoever it is, you know, just going onto someone's podcast. He's going to have a brilliant podcast outside of WWE.
Are you a fan of that, when guys leave the company and then they go and trash talk the company?
No, not trash talk the company. I like it when they go out and they just sort of tell their stories and just, you know, vent their frustrations. And just like, because you can always, you can feel like FTR, I thought, was a great example. You saw them on TV and you're like, God, those guys look like they are having the worst time. Like they are just not enjoying themselves whatsoever. Miro was another one where you're like, dude is not, like, he cannot wait to get out of there. And I can't wait. I'm a guy that grew up on shoot interviews. You know, I spent the late 90s, early 2000s watching those shoot interviews, trading tapes with people. You get like these VHS tapes that are 3.5 hours long. And it's the Iron Sheik that is going to tell all of these stories that you never knew. And it's going to be very, very sweary and stuff. I used to love those sorts of things. I used to work a night shift job. And I used to download them as MP3s. I had one of those like little tiny MP3 players before the days of iPods. And I used to just load those with shoot interviews, like audio files of shoot interviews, and just listen to those. This is pre-podcast days. I was like, this is like basically my version of a podcast. I would just listen to those during my night shifts. And that was how I got through my working day or night.
That's interesting, because I know that when people are trying to get views on their interviews and they're clipping stuff out, they always use the hashtag shoot interview. And whenever someone uses that hashtag, like, you can guarantee that that video is going to skyrocket, or they put it in the title. And I'm like, okay, that's an easy way to get views, but it makes sense because a lot of people are really interested in that.
Yeah, I used to love a shoot interview. Oh, it was brilliant.
You like the drama, Luke. You want the tea.
I do. I want the drama. Exactly. I don't know if I understand that phrase completely, but yes.
Wait, you've never heard you want the tea? Like, you want the tea, you have the tea?
Is this what Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair kept doing?
Were they saying that? I don't remember. Because if you say, like,
the tea.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, if I were to say, like, oh, like, Luke, I have some tea for you, like, sit down, this is it. That means I have some great gossip for you. I have all the details. It's coming your way. Or if you say, like, oh, give us the tea, you're basically saying, like, give us the gossip. So, or like, I have the tea. It's because I think it comes from the fact that, you know, people, you know, they sit down with their tea and they look so fancy and they're gossiping. So I think that's where it originates from. And so that's a saying here, like, give us the tea, or you have the tea, or just along those lines.
Well, okay, then I do like the tea, is what I said. I will always take the tea. Bloody love a cup of tea, me. But this kind of like you fans thing is, me and Adam have been joking about this a lot recently when talking about Phenomenons, the board game channel that we've launched. That it's kind of wonderful to do this board game channel, because there isn't a sport or piece of medium or entertainment in this world that hates its fans more than professional wrestling. I feel like Vince loves the fact that we give him money. but he hates the fact that we have opinions. And I think wrestlers like the fact that we give them money and buy their merchandise, but hate the fact that we have opinions and sort of like think about these things. You know, Seth Rollins told Guerrilla Position back in August, the quote, "In an age of instant gratification, audiences don't have the patience for long-term storytelling. When you can just binge watch your favorite shows in 2 days, as opposed to 2 months, it creates a different precedent for how we intake our entertainment." And that was Seth Rollins basically saying, fans, we are trying to do long-term storytelling, but you fans can't take long-term storytelling, so we just don't do it, which I think is bollocks, basically.
Yeah, I think that there's some truth to that, but then at the same time, you can't necessarily say that, because what long-term storytelling is there with the AEW women's division? Because if there's some long-term storytelling going on there, then I'm completely and utterly dumb because I haven't seen it whatsoever. So yeah. I just think that sometimes people forget that people have brains, like people are thinking, and there's people that, you know, you've seen the Reddit threads where people really go into detail and they analyze these storylines that they're seeing on TV. And that's a good thing because they care. And I know, you know, like you mentioned, maybe some wrestlers, they don't like that, you know, people like us have opinions about wrestling or opinions about what they're doing in the ring or whatever it is. And the thing is, it's like, at least, you know, people are talking about you and they care enough to talk about you. If nobody cared and nobody was talking about you, you wouldn't be famous and you wouldn't be on this platform.
Absolutely. And like in a world, we live in, you know, a golden age of entertainment where like you have got so many options of things to watch. You know, you can get like Netflix have probably got 30 shows at the moment that are just like, oh, this is must watch TV. And that's just one platform. Disney Plus have, you know, launching out these great series. I'm still trying to catch up on The Mandalorian. I'm only like partway through series one. I was saying to a friend of mine, it's because my wife doesn't watch it. And because me and my wife watch everything together, I mean, I get to watch it in 20 minute chunks. I get to watch 15 to 20 minutes, like every couple of days, I get to watch something of The Mandalorian. While my wife is like, if my wife is making dinner that day, that's when I get to watch a bit of The Mandalorian. I watch 15 minutes of it, stop it, and then I can come back to it 3 days later to watch another 15 minutes of it. It's taken me a long time to get through that show.
That is so sweet, because so I can't do that. I applaud you and your wife, because me and my fiance, we come up with a system now. I'm into my shows on Netflix. Sometimes he gets into the shows that I get into, but for the most part, he has different tastes. So we bond, but we both watch on separate devices. So I'll be watching on my phone and he'll watch on TV, because we don't watch the same things. It's so hard.
Yeah, I mean, it basically boils down to it. If me and my wife aren't into the show, then the show doesn't get watched. Unless, of course, we just sort of watch it separately. But then we very rarely like watch anything separately from each other.
Do you argue, though? Like, is it hard to decide what you're going to watch?
Oh, no, we're very much into the same sort of things. Okay. Like, she's just not a Star Wars fan. So she tried. She watched the first episode, but she couldn't get into it.
I'm not a Star Wars fan either. I like the new movies, but that's about it.
But the point I was making was that there's so much good stuff here. I really hate this argument that a lot of wrestlers and sort of wrestling fans give, which is just like, just shut up and enjoy it. Like, just shut up, sit back and enjoy, even if it's rubbish. Because I'm like, but there's so much good stuff. I don't want to have something where I have to shut up and watch it.
Exactly. It's fun to have an opinion.
Right. Okay. Well, let's quickly dive into the AEW NXT ratings war. Predictably, both shows were down because of the presidential election coverage. But actually, I don't think they were hit as bad as I thought they were going to be. Dynamite was 717,000, which is down from last week, obviously, but it's only 8% down. It's not massive. And the 18 to 49 demographic was probably way down the most. It was a 0.3 rating, which is down 6% from the previous week. NXT was down significantly more because obviously they had Halloween Havoc the previous week. But they dropped quite away. I'm trying to find out if I've got the number here. They were down 30% in total viewers, and they were also down in the ratings. But that was obviously, you know, Halloween Havoc was a massive bump in numbers for them. And really, both shows were hurt by the news coverage. And I think the lack of the over 50 category really hurt NXT's number, because the over 50 category that usually is watching NXT were tuning in to watch the presidential coverage, which I think a lot of people were, really. I won't ask you for your thoughts on both shows, but I will ask you if you've got any hot takes for this coming Saturday's Full Gear.
Yeah, so I don't know about hot takes, but I am really looking forward to the Kenny Omega Hangman Page match. I think that's going to be match of the night. So that's the one I'm most looking forward to. I know that we did our predictions on Pro Wrestling Sheet today, and Louis said that his match that he's looking forward to is FTR and the Young Bucks, and I like lost it. I was like, that's the match you're most looking forward to. So we had a little bit of a disagreement there, but it kind of worked out. But I do think that we are going to be seeing, I don't know if this is a hot take, but I think we are going to be seeing MJF as the new leader of the Inner Circle. I do see that happening. I'm hoping to see Darby win the TNT title, and I do see Jon Moxley winning, defeating Eddie Kingston. So that's going to be pretty interesting as well.
But you don't have an opinion on the incredibly hot build between Nyla Rose and Hikaru Shida, where Shida just said last week, I guess we'll have a match then.
Yes, I know. It's sad because that one, it just feels like, does it even matter who even wins this match? Do you even care? Oh, if I were to say Nyla Rose is going to win that one, you're not going to be like, well, you know what, Denise, you're wrong because this and that. You don't have anything. There's nothing to say.
There's absolutely nothing to say. Oh, I'm not going to get into this again. I got a series of tweets yesterday from someone who's very, very angry at me because I keep saying that the AEW women's division is badly booked. Because basically their argument was,
wait,
like,
was it like a fan or was it like somebody important?
No, it was a fan. It was someone, because Ollie and I bring it up on every AEW show, which is just like, oh man, it's just, I don't know why this company doesn't care. And they were like, it's sick. I'm sick and tired of hearing you complain about the division. It's not going to change. I don't think it's not the best argument I would take.
No, I put out a tweet basically saying that if I had just started watching AEW that night, I would have never known that Hikaru Shida was the champion, or never would have guessed until I actually saw her with the belt. But there wasn't really any sort of emphasis on her or anything to make her feel like a big deal or to make her feel like a champion. And I put this out there, and I will say that 100% of what I saw, or like 99.9% of the feedback I got on Twitter, was everybody agreeing with that. I mean, people had different reasons as to why, but I don't think anybody could argue the fact that there really is no light on the women's division. And that's pretty unfortunate. So if people are telling themselves otherwise, I think they need to really take a look at that.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you like quizzes? Do you like wrestling? Do you like watching self-professed experts in their fields being exposed as dangerous frauds? Then you'll love Quizzlemania, brought to you by Parts Funknown, the team behind acclaimed wrestling RPG No Rolls Barred. Join us every week as four wrestling pundits pit their knowledge against each other in a cerebral wrangle for prizes, glory, and a bit of good old-fashioned escapism. Enjoy the videos live every Wednesday on Parts Funknown's YouTube channel, or subscribe right now to have them beam straight to your mobile device. Quizzlemania, it's the showcase of the Immorons.
Right, well, let's dive into your Patreon mailbag questions. If you want to submit a question to the Patreon mailbag for me and Denise to answer, all you got to do is become one of our Patreons over at patreon.com/WrestleTalk. Leave a comment in the community section labeled mailbag. Do not email me. I will just lose it. Make sure you label it mailbag because I may accidentally scroll past it because we do get a lot of comments that are just left on there anyway. There's very, very specific instructions that need to be done. Very bad at my job.
Sounds very hard.
I know, right? And if you are a patron, the poll for the next episode of WrestleTalk Extra is live for you to go and vote on. Currently winning is Survivor Series 2001, but it's a bit of a neck and neck race at the moment between Survivor Series 2001 and Survivor Series 2014. Both shows I would really love to look back on because I love that 2014 match with the debut of Sting, but holy heck, it's 2001, the end of the Alliance. Team WWF versus Team WCW of Shane McMahon and Steve Austin. Kurt Angle, and just so Booker T's the only guy, they'd be like, hello, I'm from WCW. Anyway, right, Irakli, would you rather the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view get replaced by a Punjabi prison pay-per-view or Vince Russo return to write Raw?
Vince Russo return to write Raw. I know a lot of people don't like Vince Russo. I like Vince Russo. I'm a Vince Russo fan. I don't know if that's controversial, but I've always liked Vince Russo.
I'm going to go in the complete opposite direction. I'd rather have the Punjabi prison pay-per-view. I hate Vince Russo. Like, I don't like the way he writes TV. He ruins TNA, Denise. He ruins TNA. That was my company, and he ruined it.
You know what? The reason why I'm a fan of Vince Russo is that I find with the things he says very funny, and maybe I have, like, a very different... I'm a very humor type of person, very sarcastic. I like humoristic jokes, and I like the fact that he brings things that are outside of the box when it comes to his writing and the things that he brings into wrestling. And yeah, maybe they weren't all hits. I'm not saying that, like, oh, they were all hits or every idea was amazing, but I do like the fact that he brought a very different creative aspect to wrestling. And I got to work with him actually when I was ring announcing for Aura Lucha. And it was really cool to just sort of, get this like firsthand experience at working with Vince Russo. And I have like this funny story. I'll share it really quickly. So when I was like sitting down in one of the team meetings, we were like writing down my notes and basically like my job and what I was supposed to do for the event. And afterwards, Vince Russo gets my notebook and he's like, can I see this for a second? And I was like, yeah. And he looks through it and he reads my notes. And I think he was making sure that I didn't write down any spoilers to give to like any of the dirt sheets. And I looked at him and I was like, but all my notes were literally like, make sure to thank the sponsors, you know, stuff like that, like a ring announcer would have. And I remember like sitting there like super nervous thinking like, I'm not going to be giving any information out. But I just remember that one experience. But he was such a great person to work with. But that moment will always like stay in my mind that it was just really funny, you know, but he's really nice, though, like in person, like really, really nice.
That's the one thing. Yeah. Ollie's always, because Ollie's worked with him. He did some stuff with WrestleTalk once, and Ollie said, like, yeah, no, actually, he was a really, really nice guy. I've got low opinions of Vince Russo's writing. And those shoot interviews I was talking about, I listen to a lot of Vince Russo shoot interviews. The guy can talk for days and talk out of his ass at the same time. Mike says, I love this idea. Do you think we could get a finger poke of doom moment in the MJF Jericho match? I can't seem to get the thought out of my head, and I wouldn't put it past them either.
I don't want to see any of that ever again in wrestling, ever. Okay, no.
It was Vince Russo. Come on, dude, you were just putting him over.
All the ideas were good. All right, I specifically said not all the ideas.
Robert Ray says, by the way, I think that's quite fun. And I think that would really piss a lot of people off. I think that'd be
great.
Wait,
but we were opposite. How are we opposite? We were opposite in terms of whether or not we're Vince Russo fans. And then we were opposite on our opinions for that. This is not making sense. We're starting to be like some Republican Democrats, but on here, we're just like, we're not making any sense anymore.
Robert Ray says, I watched a video on Wrestle 2 of Luke and Ollie talking about misheard lyrics. So my question is, what is the funniest, best misheard lyric you've heard in a wrestler's theme song? You have the classic Lobster Head and Too Many Lives from Sheamus's old music. But I think the funniest one is Quizzlemania Tag Champs, former Quizzlemania Tag Champs, the Good Brothers. Their WWE themes, which is the lyrics were, we are the omen in the sky. But I always thought it was, we are the old men in the sky.
Okay, I actually have one for this one. And I know there's probably a lot more, but I just can't think of them right now. But Nia Jax theme where she says, I'm not like most girls, right? I used to think for the longest time was, I'm not a monster. And I would literally sing it like, I'm not a monster. It made no sense. But I was like, all right, if this is her theme song, then it's her theme song.
She's just letting you know, hey, guys, look, you're booking me as a monster, but I'm not a monster. I'm
right,
a nice
right.
person.
So I think part of my brain was like, okay, she's being booked as this, like, you know, big girl's going to come in. She's going to kill everyone. So I think my head, I didn't hear, I'm not like most girls. I was thinking, I'm not a monster. It was so dumb. And it took me like the longest time to realize that, too.
Oh, man. I actually don't know about wrestlers' theme songs. My favorite misheard lyric, and I think it might be on the video that we talked about, because we've been doing this on the podcast quite a bit, is Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. The lyric is, excuse me while I kiss the sky. And it sounds like he says, excuse me while I kiss this guy. And me and Ollie love that one because it's so polite. It's like, excuse me, I'm just going to go kiss this guy over here, if you don't mind.
You're right. It is something that's pretty polite. That's so funny.
Always makes me laugh. But unfortunately, I think we're retiring the misheard lyrics segment on the podcast. Ollie's bored of it now.
But there's so many. You just kind of have to remember.
Exactly. Marcus Campbell, after listening to the most recent podcast episode, do you guys think that WWE should take a similar approach to Impact, where they have their monthly specials on Impact Plus, but use Fight for pay-per-views? WWE could put their B shows on the network as a way to get people to subscribe to it, but have the big four traditional pay-per-views on services like iPay-per-views and upload them to the network a week or so later. I mean, I always thought that's what they were going to do first time round with the network, was to put Survivor Series, WrestleMania, SummerSlam on traditional pay-per-view. But I think that's kind of what they're looking to do now. I think a lot of people forget WrestleMania was on Fight this year, and it was on pay-per-view this year. Like, they were trying to...
It was on Fight? Wow,
yeah,
I don't even remember
this
that.
Year. I know, right? So I don't think anyone actually bothered getting it on Fight, because I think most people had the network.
Yeah, exactly. I have the network, so I don't even think I even bothered.
Yeah, and that was the problem, is because it kind of like it eats itself, because you're asking people to pay $60 for it to watch it on Fight, or ask them to pay $10 to get it on the network and get all the other stuff that's on the network as well. So it doesn't, like, if it was not on the network, then the Fight thing, like, that's a great idea and it's a great way to get people to buy the pay-per-view and spend more money. But if you can get it for $10 on the network and all the other stuff, I'll just get the network.
Exactly. And I think you can't change it now. It's like, you're used to it. They say, like, once you put out free content, you can't expect people to obviously the network's not free, but people say this, like, once you put out free content, you can't necessarily ask people to pay for it afterwards.
We saw this when AEW started up last year. Obviously a lot of new fans are, you know, the fans who've only come became a fan in the last couple of years, were surprised that AEW were charging like $50 for a pay-per-view, because in like their normality is paying $10 for the network and getting everything. So like the idea of a wrestling show being on a pay-per-view and you got to pay $50 for it was like outlandish. A lot of people were like, no one's going to do this. And I was like, oh man, 10 years ago, WWE were putting out 16 shows a year.
Every month we paid for it.
And we're paying $60 a month every month. In some cases, they were doing two shows a month and asking you to pay $60 for each one. Like, it's crazy how fast you can get used to the fact that $10 gets you everything.
Yes, I agree. I remember my uncle used to pay for every single pay-per-view, however much money he paid every single month. And I think about that now and I'm like, oh my God, now we just pay $10. Like, we're really lucky. I can't, it's hard. Like, when I have to pay for the AEW pay-per-views, like, thankfully my fiance pays for them because, you know, I just flash a smile and I'm like, can you pay for it? So he'll pay for that. But I mean, like, it's still, you know, it obviously hurts to pay that much money, especially when you're already playing for things like Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Stars, HBO, Disney Plus, WWE Network, New Japan World. I mean, it adds up, right? And I got Sling too on top of it because I was tired of having to illegally stream Raw, SmackDown. Well, SmackDown, I still kind of have to because of the times, but I finally got that. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm essentially, you know, paying as much as I would with cable because I'm paying for all of these different services.
Mm-hmm. That's what they wanted, Denise. They got you. That's what they absolutely wanted. I look back now, like in 2000, when over here in the UK, we got WWE on Channel 4 on free TV. And we got, like, well, part of the deal was we got four pay-per-views a year for free. They were just aired live. So we got the Rumble for free. It just aired live on Channel 4. For, like, Rumble 2000 aired on Channel 4 for nothing. The Invasion pay-per-view aired on Channel 4 for free.
So Channel 4 for you guys is a local, like, news channel too, right?
It's a national channel. So, but yeah, if you have a TV, then you can get Channel 4.
And
it's
as
long as you're paying your TV license, you get Channel 4. And like, so BBC 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, I think. Actually, there's loads of freebie channels now. But back in 2000, it was just those four channels. And that was just, like, nationally, we just had four channels. Unless you had Sky, in which case you got like the extra 30 or whatever it was. But I never had Sky. I just had my standard four channels.
Interesting.
Brian Heath says, Danuk, I hope Denise isn't too Hollywood for this show now.
I know, right? Hollywood Denise is, I mean, sorry, Hollywood Salcedo is getting places. Like, I cannot believe how popular Hollywood Salcedo became after that video.
So good. Anyways, what is your favorite match in Survivor Series history? Mine's got to be Brock versus Bryan or the 2016 main event. Oh, it's such. I love Survivor Series. Vince Russo coming up again. This is the best thing I think Vince Russo ever did. Survivor Series 98, the Deadly Games tournament. I think that is a perfectly booked one-night tournament. I love that show. It's got so many twists and turns. It's got surprises. It's got shocks. It's got not great matches, but some good matches on there. I think that show is brilliant. And I love that main event with the double turn at the end. It's so, so great.
You built it up for me all over again. I would definitely go with Bret Austin, Survivor Series 96, because I think that's when definitely you saw that Austin was like, he could really be this main eventer. So I would go with that one.
Yeah, 2014 main event as well. The Team Cena versus Team Authority match is, oh, love that match. I think that's really, really great. But really, my main answer to this, and I don't know if this will get me some heat, it's Brock Goldberg. It's the 16-second Brock Goldberg match.
Oh, my God. I loved that match. Oh. And I get heat all the time. But you know what? I own it. I get heat all the time for being a Goldberg fan because I feel that it's trendy now. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think it's trendy to be a Goldberg hater. And anybody who hates Goldberg, I feel like they're just trying to fit into the cool kids club. But you know what? I'm going to make my own club. And we are the Goldberg fans in this club.
Have you got the document open? Because Juan Villalona is back again, but there's some Spanish that I don't know if I can say because I got the star last time, but I don't know what.
I'm opening the document now. Where is this at? What part of the document?
So it's on page 2, just towards the bottom, because it's got hola, and then I'm not sure how to say this next bit.
Okay, sorry, I'm going back up.
Que tal, maybe? I don't know.
Is this on the last document or the one that you just sent right now?
The one I just sent you.
Okay,
You're on it now, yeah. So back down page 2, towards the bottom.
What page? Oh, okay, here we go. From Juan Villalona. He says, hola, ¿qué tal? It's me again. I'm impressed with Luke's Spanish. Oh, wait, the rest is in English. You can probably take that. But he's just saying, hola, ¿qué tal? He's basically saying, hey, what's up?
Okay, ¿qué tal? Yeah. I wasn't sure how to say that second bit. Okay, hola, ¿qué tal? It's me again.
Say it. Wait, let me hear you.
Okay, hola, ¿qué tal? It's me again.
¿Qué tal? Put your tongue on.
I feel like we're saying the same thing. I feel like you're not.
You're saying ketal.
Okay.
You gotta really elongate it. Like, ¿qué tal?
¿Qué tal?
Tal.
Tal.
Oh man, you gotta work on that tongue work.
As my wife tells me the same thing. I'm impressed with Luke's Spanish. It's actually quite good. Question.
Oh man, Ollie's gonna fire us. Ollie's gonna fire us for being too inappropriate on this family-friendly podcast.
It's too early. It's not even 8 a.m. here. What is your favorite wrestling move? I actually really like the Canadian Destroyer, although lately I'm starting to love Montez Ford's Frog Splash. That guy is surely a future WWE champion. Yeah, favorite wrestling move.
Mine is the Canadian Destroyer. It's so embarrassing because it's such a it's a trendy move. Everybody does it, but I pop for it each time. Like, I always pretend like I've never seen, or not that I pretend, but it always feels like I've never seen it before. And every time it's done in a match, I'm like, oh my God, that was so cool. But I also like the Spanish Fly, and I'm a mark for the high spots and stuff like that. I'm just going to own it. But yeah, I love the Canadian Destroyer.
When I first saw Petey Williams do the Canadian Destroyer, when someone lent me a TNA pay-per-view back in like 2005, I think it was. That was the first time like my exposure to TNA, and I saw Petey Williams do it in an X Division match. I blew my mind. I was like, that is the greatest thing I've ever seen. I think I still have that reaction now to every time I see a Canadian Destroyer. I'm just like, they did a Canadian. Like, even it's not a finisher anymore. It's now a setup move. And I, you know, that's, you can kind of, you know, people can discuss that till the cows come home as to whether or not that's a good thing. But I pop every single time I see a Canadian Destroyer. When Penta did one against, I think it was in the Omega match, and they did it on like the rampway. I was like, they did a Canadian Destroyer on the rampway. Like, everyone does that. And I still marked out for it. Me and Ollie went to an indie show where in the opening match between sort of like two enhancement guys, they did a Canadian Destroyer on the apron as a setup move for a high spot that was a near fall. And we were just like, we were absolutely dying of laughter, being like, man, what an incredible transitional move.
The exactly. In the opening match with two like low mid card guys. Wow.
Jason Tyrrell, which wrestler do you think has had the best theme songs, plural? I love all the versions of Jericho's Break the Walls Down, and his King of the World theme is very underrated. Of course, Judas is a classic. Taker's themes have always been badass, much pun intended, and I love all the different versions of Rock's themes. Denise is getting a prop for her answer, because of course.
All right. I wanted to have my prop for this answer. Did you finish reading the question?
I did indeed, yes.
Did you answer yours already?
I have not answered mine yet, no.
Okay, I have.
I think we know what yours is.
Mine's is definitely Triple H, and the King of Kings song is fantastic. So, yes, oh my gosh, this is a disaster. Sorry about that. Definitely Triple H.
But were you a fan of My Time as well?
Oh, yes, I love that song.
Okay, it's interesting.
You didn't like that
song? I didn't like My Time. And I was never a fan of My Time.
You are a Triple H negative Nancy, all right? You need to get on board. You need to become a Triple H fan, okay? I know you're not a Triple H fan.
Okay, well,
I think telling you that, and I can't accept it.
I think it does stem from like that 2000 period, just hating Triple H. Like, you know, yeah. Rightly so, because he was the heel. Like, I was supposed to not like him. But I genuinely think a lot of that still hits me hard. Where I'm like, no, Cactus Jack should have won at No Way Out 2000. You big bastard. You retired him and he was my favorite.
I can't accept this, Luke. I just cannot accept this. Like, I was like a Triple H fan from day one. A fan, and it's always stuck through. And even with like, this has nothing to do with like, if his songs belong to somebody else, I would still pick those songs though.
I'm gonna go with Christian though. I think Christian's had always badass theme song. I loved his Edge and Christian theme song, his solo run song of the Christian, that is amazing. His TNA song was great.
Which one's the one, sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but which one's the one, oh god, where he the something about the lights.
Yeah, with the like, oh, if you close your eyes, the night fitting in. Yeah, that one.
Guys, yes, that is one of my all-time favorite wrestling theme songs.
Yeah, I think Christian's always had great songs. Wilson Simons, a few months ago, I was watching NXT with a friend who didn't watch any wrestling after The Shield broke up. I was telling him how exciting wrestling is at the moment because of all the different companies and wrestling styles and variety. While watching NXT, my friend got noticeably bored during a match between Roderick Strong and Johnny Gargano. Switched to AEW, and he instantly fell in love with Hangman Page. My question is, do you think NXT is catered too much towards the hardcore audience, whereas AEW is a perfect mix of mainstream and hardcore fan service?
No. I would say no, because that's what makes NXT special. If you want to watch something that's more catered to the mainstream audience, then you go and you watch Raw and SmackDown. And some can argue that AEW caters to their main hardcore audience, given the fact that they expect the fans to know everything that really goes on Being the Elite, AEW Dark. And that's not necessarily to say that everybody watches the those shows. So I think you can argue it for both sides. And I do get it. Like NXT is more, you know, match. But I think that's just more of their style. I don't think they're necessarily catering to a certain fan base. I think that's their style, versus AEW likes to add more entertainment in terms of, like, you know, you see more promos, more silly stuff being done. But that's because I think that's like their Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I think that's what they are attempting to do, is to kind of mix the New Japan style that people love of hardcore wrestling fans, but with sort of the entertainment style that brings in the mass audience to Raw and SmackDown. And I would argue, actually, that that's the one thing that people, that hardcore fans don't like about AEW. What they want is to be is New Japan, but in America. And I think that AEW were kind of like maybe pushing away some of those people who don't want this. They don't want the dinner debonair. They don't want that kind of stuff to interfere with their wrestling show with the best wrestlers on the planet.
That was, you know, I'm glad that you bring that up, because in today's media call, Cody Rhodes essentially took back the whole sports-based comment that he had made at the start of AEW, and basically said that when he said that, he was more so talking about himself, seeing himself as more sports-centric versus actually the company being sports-based. And he was talking about how, you know, different wrestlers bring different flavors. One of the examples that he used was Chris Jericho, basically saying, like, yeah, like he's more of like a comedy type guy, not necessarily sports-based. So he said, and I quote, "I can chuckle a bit," going back and seeing at some of the things that, you know, he said about that. And I'm like, okay, that's not something you can necessarily go back at, because I get it. Like, some people are like, all right, get over it, it's not sports-based. But a lot of people were judging AEW based off that comment. And I know this because I read the comments, and I do have to agree with those people. If you're you're introducing a company and you're talking about, like, any company, you're talking about your mission statement, and then you say that this is, like, what the company is going to be, and then it's not that, and then people get mad. You know, you, like you said, viewers can get upset because they're not interested in this, you know, mimosa, you know, mayhem matches, or, you know, the dinner debonair, all of that. So you can't get mad at the fans that get mad about that, because that was what was said, and that was what was, you know, not promised, but sort of advertised.
I would say promised. I would say advertised, absolutely. But I would say that they were very much saying it was going to be a sports-based product. That, to me, like, I know you're not a Star Wars fan, but there's a moment in The Empire Strikes Back, or actually in Return of the Jedi, when Lucas found out that Darth Vader is his father. But Obi-Wan had told him that he had killed his father, and being like, that your father died, right? And he's like, but my father's alive. He's like, well, your father, Anakin Skywalker, died, but he's now become Darth Vader. He's now more machine than he is man. So what I said was true from a certain point of view. What Cody there, has he Obi-Wan'd that argument? Where he's like, yeah, I did say that, and what I said was true from a certain point of view, where I am now, like, I think that's actually quite a lot of balderdash. I think he is very much just like, he's just peddling back.
And no one was talking about that. Like, nobody on Twitter. And I was like, guys, did you not hear? He essentially just took that back. And I was like, all right, whatever. I'm not going to make a big deal about it, because I frankly don't care. But at the same time, I'm like, what the heck? Like, this was said, and now it's essentially taken back. And it's something that obviously not a lot of people are going to know about, because, you know, how many people actually listen to the media calls, or, you know, the media briefings? They are put out there, but not a lot of people listen to that stuff. So I did think that was something very interesting. And I thought it was one of the most interesting things that Cody said today in the media briefing.
I miss that, actually. Although I've, you know, not been up for it. I need to go through everything that was on those media calls. Anyway, right, moving on. Callum, with Karrion Kross being out for a long time, do you think they will call his act up with Scarlett straight to the main roster? What do you dream matches do you have for him? For me, it's against The Fiend at WrestleMania. Just imagine the entrances. I mean, that was actually the rumor on Karrion Kross, that he was going to get fast-tracked to the main roster. And I don't know, like, do you think there is a story there for him to go back to NXT and reclaim the NXT championship that he didn't really get to hold because he went out with the injury? Or do you think actually the better thing to do is just fast track him straight to the main roster and just get him out there?
No, I would say have him go back to NXT because, first of all, NXT needs a talent like Karrion Kross. And also, I just don't think it should be something that should be left unfinished. Like, he was champion. Like, you just can't forget that. Like, you don't want to leave it like that. Fix it.
fix it, guys. Kevin said, what year do you think is the worst / best of the 2010s WWE? It's not an easy question to answer because each year's had its hot garbage. My pick would be 2015, even though at the end of the year was a bit meh, it still had solid booking, good pay-per-views, and NXT was great. For the worst one, I'd say it's 2018. After WrestleMania, it just fell off a cliff. But 2010 is also a good contender. 2010 is, I mean, me and Ollie have talked about this at great length. 2010 is the year that I nearly stopped. Like, that was the year that nearly drove me completely away because I was so into the Nexus and I was so into the angle that they were doing, and they just beat them on their first go. And I was like, oh God, I'm done. I'm absolutely done. And I was pretty much already done with the company anyway because I was so into TNA. And I was, even though Vince Russo, Hogan, and Bischoff were doing their best to kind of ruin my enjoyment of that. But that was like the time where I was like, yeah, no, I think I'm done now.
And I can see that too, because I think like 2010, 2011, 2012 was when I was sort of coming in and out, where I wasn't watching every show religiously every week. I think that's when I started sort of like phasing in and out. I would come in, watch the pay-per-views, watch the major stuff, keep up with the news, but I wasn't watching everything every single day. But with that, I would say that maybe the best one would be the rise of Daniel Bryan with the Yes Movement. That would like 2013, that would be the best. Maybe the worst, which was when I really wasn't watching all that much, was probably the Miz era as champ in 2011.
It wasn't great.
It wasn't anything special. So I think that would probably be my pick.
I'm going to say for best, I'm actually going to go 2014, because like that was the year you got the Daniel Bryan win with WrestleMania, which like is, you know, absolutely amazing. But you also had like, that was like the rise of NXT as well. Like, I think that was when it was, you know, the network had launched and you were really starting to get to know a lot of these characters. And they were putting on these takeovers. They were like, oh my God, this is a great, great show. And I remember really, really getting into NXT into 2014 and then into 2015. And 2014, I also really loved Seth Rollins as champion. And I really, like, kind of dug him with the Authority and his Jan promos. Like, I loved that side of Seth. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go with 2014. I really enjoyed that year. Matt Nedickfield. Hey, Luke, and nice to officially say hello to you, Denise. Finally back as a patron after stepping away in July, stepping down as moderator. Had to go back to Wetherspoons after lockdown. Had no time. Got a new job in sales now, earning so much more money and in a much better place. Congratulations to you, Matt. Anyway, my question is, what is your favorite WWE video package?
I don't think I have a specific one, but I have more of the ones that I like. I would say any WrestleMania hype video. I forget which one it was, but it was the one where they show like people from all over the world watching WrestleMania. You got the people in the, like, in the desert and like these little huts, but they all have this X7. Little TV.
X17? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's X7.
Okay, that might definitely be the one then, because that's the one that I like the best, because I believed it. Like, I believed that was real. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, all of those people are watching WrestleMania. That is so cool. So because I believed it, I would probably go with that. But I also like when they do like the Royal Rumble fact videos and they're like, you know, talking about like the seconds and how many persons this person took out. And I like fun facts and stuff like that. Granted, I forget all of them. What?
It's 25 big shows.
Exactly. So those would be my favorites. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like Austin Rock WrestleMania X7 is a classic set to My Way. I think that's really great. The Daniel Bryan Monster video is so emotionally great, but it's Banks Bailey going into TakeOver Brooklyn. Oof. Oh, it's so good. Absolutely. What A-class stuff. Dwayne at the Gronk Johnson. I've been working very long hours all of last week, so I missed a lot of your podcast content. So sorry you discussed this already, but did you manage to watch the Walter Ilya Dragunov NXT UK title match? It was the WWE match of the year, in my opinion, and personally loved the brutality of it. Walter is easily one of my favorite wrestlers right now. What did you guys make of it? It was stiff as a dick. It was so brutal. But it's, yeah, and I've said this before and I'll say it again. It's damn shame it was on NXT UK, where absolutely very few people are going to see it.
Okay, so everybody was talking about this match and I made a note to it. Watch it, Denise. Watch it. And I forgot. So ask me this question again next week because I will have an answer for you. But everybody that I know that have different opinions and wrestling tastes have all said, this match is incredible. This is match of the year. And I have not heard not one bad thing about this match. So I need to watch it. I'm behind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to echo what Mafu said about this from Botchamania, which is that I've seen Walter Dragunov have 1,000 matches. Like, I've seen them have so many matches. But every time I watch them, I'm like, damn, dude, they pull out something new every single time. Like, I think they work together so well, and they have such a unique style about them. I love Walter. Dragunov is incredible. Like, I think he is an absolutely incredible talent. And yeah, it is a crying shame that they are just, I feel like NXT UK is a dead brand. And they are like, I feel like they're being wasted. They should be in front of many, many more eyes. Like, and I think it sucks.
I agree because, like, if I'm going to be honest, I think NXT UK is one of those shows that I like rarely watch. And, like, you know, the only reason I'm going to watch this match is because people are talking about it and I need to watch what the people are talking about. But I do agree in the sense of I think that they might have like their diehards, the people that are like, oh my God, NXT UK, I got to watch it. But in terms of appealing to more of a larger mass audience, I do think it is lacking that.
Garrett Rogers, there's a question specifically for Mr. Davis, which is very difficult because he's not on this show, but I will address it anyway. It says, Dear Mr. Davis, I was recently listening to the magazine show with Lukewarm Luke Owen and Denise and was shocked with what I heard. Luke Owen is looking to buy a new pair of jeans for £100. The same man who scoffed at your £40 of Uniqlo jeans. The same man who previously was happy to spend £20 on various t-shirts, but only £10 on his singular pair of jeans in what I can only describe as Steiner maths, is now spending £100 on a second pair of jeans. Is the lukewarm merch money that good? I know the war is over, but I need to hear your take on this, Mr. Davis. Now, Garrett, I didn't say I was going to. I did say I was considering doing it because it was more ethically right for me to spend that £100. But I don't particularly want to because it's £100 for a pair of jeans and that's far too much money.
So you haven't gotten them yet?
No, of course. I mean, I'm not leaving the house at the moment. We're back in lockdown again. So I'm back in my shorts again, even though it is cold as F out here. But like when I eventually have to leave the house and I do need to buy a new pair of jeans because I currently don't own a pair of jeans now because they're all like busted up. Oh, I don't know, maybe. Or I'll go there, I'll ask someone for Christmas. I'll ask my mum for Christmas. Like, Mum, buy me some jeans for Christmas.
You need to make your mom buy you those 100-pound jeans.
Hey, she's all right. She's doing okay for herself.
It's so weird. When I said 100-pound jeans, I was like, God, that sounds so weird. It sounds like the jeans weigh 100 pounds. It felt weird coming out of my mouth.
Heaviest pair of jeans ever. Yes. So anyway, yes, Garrett, I haven't decided yet whether I am going to spend that money. Alan Monsoon says, hey, Team Danuk, with the way MGF has been booked in AEW since the beginning of Dynamite, when do you believe he'll become AEW world champion and who should he win it against? My prediction is he's going to win it by the end of 2022 and he beats either Paige or Cody if he's able to compete with the title with the help of Wardlow. Also believe that Wardlow will turn babyface and win the belt from MGF, similar to Triple H Batista at WrestleMania 21. That's interesting. Like the second part of that, I think, is very interesting because I've never pegged Wardlow as a future AEW world champion.
I don't peg Wardlow as a future AEW world champion either.
And it's nothing against Wardlow because I think he's great. Like I've really enjoyed his singles matches that he's had on Dynamite. But at this moment in time, and maybe it's just at this moment in time, I don't see him in that position. But yeah, I've never thought about it.
See, like, I always see it as, like, there's people that are good and then there's people that are great. And I think that the people that are good, but the people that are great are the ones that should be the champions. So that's why I don't necessarily see it just yet. But in terms of MJF, I do see him one day as an AEW world champion. However, not right now, because I don't think he necessarily needs it. I think right now the person that should eventually become a champion after Moxley should be Kenny Omega. I think he should be the face of the company, carrying that company. And if not Kenny Omega, I would go with Hangman Page.
Yeah, and that's a great show. I do, to answer the question, I think we're likely going to see, but I'd say probably in like 4 or 5 years, we'll see MJF as the champion. I think they're really going to extend it out and really make sort of us fans, like, not so much wait for it, but like make it so it becomes this really big deal that he wins the title. They'll certainly wait until it's the right time in order to do it. Magnus says, do you think that
I prefer that.
Yeah, no, same
here. Oh, sorry. I prefer that. I prefer the wait. I think it's better.
Same here. But we can't handle long-term booking, according to Seth Rollins. Do you think that Moxley and Kingston are mad that they have to follow the I Quit match between Reigns and Jay? One thing that is terrific about the match is they were so close to each other, other people will compare it. But also because of the chokeout spots, they have the story between Moxley and Kingston since their first match, where one of Kingston's motivations for the rematch. Will there be a similar spot where they choke each other out now? Should they do it? Yeah, I'd actually consider that. But if they do that double chokeout spot, which would totally make sense given the storyline going into it, then people will automatically compare it to Reigns Jay. And I think for my money, if you had that spot planned, I would take that spot out now because you're going to get unfair comparisons.
See, the second that they announced that this was going to be an I Quit match, right away I made the comparison. I was like, all right, well, here's the thing too, is that like, obviously, you know, WWE's watching the AEW product, AEW's watching the WWE product. So I almost feel, and they obviously announced it after Jey Uso, Roman Reigns and all of that. I feel that they shouldn't have done the I Quit just because we're just seeing it on WWE. You're supposed to be an alternative to WWE. Let's try to think of something different, or at least wait a little while until you do a stipulation like that that is being done in WWE right now with one of their hottest feuds, hottest storylines. So I would say that, yeah, people are going to be drawing that comparison. But I think that because of the way Jey Uso, Roman Reigns played out, that what Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley do is bound to be very different. So I'm not expecting them to be the same thing just because of what Roman Reigns and Jey Uso did was completely different.
Yeah, I think they're going to be very, very different matches. I said this on the AEW podcast, but I'm going to echo it again. Simon Miller from What Culture said that someone really needs to tell Eddie Kingston that wrestling is a work, because like it just everything that he does feels like it's so real to him. And that's what I love about Kingston. And I think we're going to see that. Yeah, and I think we're going to see that in the match against Moxley. It actually, I'm so excited for Full Gear for various different reasons. But the match that I'm low-key most excited for is Kingston Moxley. I can't wait to see it, man. I think it's going to be so, so great. The real Cameron from Carolina. Unfortunately, Cameron, we haven't got enough time to go into everything because he sent across this massive spreadsheet of just like, here is how I would rebook Survivor Series and sort of like, you know, how I would reformat it to make everything and give it stakes and everything. So we haven't got time to go into that, but I very much enjoyed looking at it. It was really, really good. But I do want to read it. It said, I realize it's a lot of info, but I hope Denise doesn't think it's hashtag pants and will give it a yes, please. Hashtag get rowdy. I currently commute 200 miles a day to work until my lease is up and the rest of the podcast make it much more enjoyable. Cameron from South Carolina. Well, shout out to you, Cameron from South Carolina, and your heck of a commute that you've
got to do. Did you say 200 miles?
Yeah.
Oh my God, every day?
I mean, that's what he says. I currently commute 200 miles a day to work.
That is incredible. Wow. Honestly, that's awesome. I'm glad that we helped maybe speed that time up.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris says, okay, so it's a hypothetical world. COVID is no longer a thing. Crowds are allowed back in shows. It's WrestleMania. Which entrance music are you choosing to be the first heard by a live crowd? I've got one simple answer for this, Denise.
What is it?
Actually, no, I've changed my mind. I've got two then. I've got two answers.
You seem so sure. I was like,
I was so sure. And then I thought of another one just before I said it. Roman. Just having that, because if there's one theme song that is guaranteed to get a reaction, whether it is positive or negative, it's going to be Roman Reigns. And he always gets like that is as soon as that music hits, that draws something out the audience. The other one is Vince. is having Vince and No Chance in Hell play.
I think I have to agree with you on that Vince one, because the one I have is not going to happen. But when I think of the best, because we've been missing the crowds, I'm going for the best. And that's Austin. He has the best pop, but obviously that's probably never going to happen. But since this is a hypothetical world, I'll throw that one in there just because that no, there's no pop like that one. But I do like your Vince McMahon pick on that one. And I do think that Roman Reigns would be a good one too, considering everything that he's doing right now in the company.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Donnelly, my question is, why do fans crap on AEW? It's the only one of the two companies that actively tries to get better and succeeds in putting on a decent show every week. It's the only company that all the wrestlers actually enjoy working for and get treated fairly. And it's a TV-14, which most fans have been asking for the last 12 years. I'm not a fan of WWE, but instead of complaining online, I just stopped watching it and started watching a product I enjoyed. If you feel a show is that bad, you have your voice of displeasure online, why continue watching it? I think it's probably unfair to say that fans crap on AEW, because I think AEW fans crap on WWE and NXT. I think it's basically, Andrew, what I think the question boils down to is just tribalism is bad. I think that tribalism is bad in wrestling. I think it's bad in politics. I think it's bad in all walks of life. And we see this every single week. The AEW stream is the stream that our moderators always have the most trouble with, because that is the one where AEW fans get very, very defensive, but NXT fans come in to say that this is a bad product to try and rile people up, or create fake accounts to try and rile people up. So it is tribalism is never a good thing.
I agree with you. And I do think that we see it from both sides. And I also think that, you know, when you say that there's essentially nothing wrong with AEW, that is a big, like, if WWE fans see that, they're going to be like, come on, bro. Like, don't act like it's pitch perfect. And I think it's the same thing with WWE, when AEW fans see WWE people being like, oh, wow, the show's perfect. And then obviously the fans are going to get upset too, because no show is perfect. And we've talked about this. And so it's just, yeah, you see it from both sides. And I do agree with him in the sense of, if you don't like something, just stop watching it. All right, good. Just stop watching it. But I do know that, you know, there are people that just don't want to give AEW a chance because they're WWE loyalists and they don't necessarily even watch the product. So I do think that a lot of people are doing just that as well.
We've got a couple more to get through here. Alex Kirkman, is Finn Balor the most overlooked wrestler in WWE? I think he's the best wrestler in the company. From his demon persona, it gives him two styles of matches, which is rarely done. And Matt, what do people say? Going to NXT is a demotion, and WWE are massively dropping the ball with him. Is it? And it's all because of that injury. It's ridiculous. Don't laugh, but I honestly think he's better than AJ Styles. His matches are more entertaining, and like I said, the demon character in storyline is visually good. I'm sure you agree. Stay safe, Swath Nation. Haven't heard that in a while. So yeah, do you think that Finn Balor is the most overlooked wrestler in WWE?
No, because there is a lot of overlooked talent in WWE right now. But I will say that Finn Balor is definitely one of the top contenders in terms of being overlooked. And I do have to disagree with the fact that NXT is seen as a demotion. I don't think so, because that is where you're seeing a certain type of match that you would not see on Raw or on SmackDown. And I think that's what Finn Balor wanted to do. And so I kind of see it as some place where he can really, you know, shine a lot brighter. Unfortunately, because of the injuries that he's had, we haven't really been able to see that completely fulfilled. But I do think that in terms of what I've been seeing when he's on NXT, I do think that they're going in the direction where they want to do something with Finn Balor. Unfortunately, it just hasn't been timing and injuries just hasn't been working in Finn Balor's favor, unfortunately. But I think once all the stars align, I think we're all going to see the Finn Balor that we want to see. And in terms of him being better than AJ Styles, I think that's up to everybody's, you know, own opinion. I'm a bigger AJ Styles fan just because, you know, I've seen so much more of his work and so many more of his matches and what he can really do with several different types of opponents. But again, everybody is entitled to their own opinion. And I don't think that that's a bad opinion to say that you think Finn Balor might be a little bit better than AJ.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Like, I think it is, it's a shame. It's probably a crying shame that we've never seen Finn Balor have a real proper WrestleMania, like, feud match. And, like, I mean, Finn Balor probably should have main evented three WrestleManias by this point because the guy is incredible. But then again, I think you could say that about a lot of talents in WWE, that they probably should have main evented a WrestleMania at this point. Right, and we've got one last question here from Abhiram. He said, someone brought this up last week, or maybe it was a few weeks ago, that there's too much negativity in wrestling and people have too much blind loyalty. But the way I see it, if you really love something, shouldn't you be the first to criticize it? For example, Louis, who loved everything AEW did, always spent a few minutes on Fightful's post show ranting about how much their women's division sucked and people called him too negative, and that just made no sense to me. Am I wrong in thinking that? Am I giving constructive criticism or just being negative? Sander for WrestleMania. Also, Denise, your Hulk Hogan costume this week was the best. If only we had someone with a Steve Austin inspired costume, we could finally see Hogan versus Austin. I mean, it's never going to happen, Abraham, I'm afraid. I will say this, though. Louis hates AEW. Louis does not. Louis is he's an NXT mark. He's a diehard NXT. He's died in the wall.
I thought the opposite way.
I'm only teasing. But it's a running joke that we have here. That he's, because he always started off our morning meetings just talking about how much he didn't like watching Dynamites and would love watching NXT. But yeah, it's I think. It's again that sort of tribalism thing, but you're right. Like, I think if a product you love isn't great, then I think you should be able to voice that opinion. Like, I don't think the internet has become this place where you have to like something or you have to hate something. There's no loving something but also having a problem with it. So if you do then have a problem with it, as Abraham said, if you do have a problem with something, then instantly, oh, you're a hater, you're just being negative for the sake of being negative. There's no shades of gray anymore. You have to be, it's binary. Yes, it has to be a thumbs up or it has to be a thumbs down.
See, I think I agree with you, and I never thought about it that way, because you're right. People either are like, I like it or I hate it. Or if you don't say you like it or you hate it, then you hate it automatically or you love it automatically, depending on what it is that you're talking about. And it's true, though. Not everything's like that. There are shades of gray where there's some things that are just there. They're just there. And, you know, the example of, you know, Louis saying that, you know, he likes AEW, but then he goes and he, you know, gives this constructive criticism on the AEW women's division. I don't necessarily think that that is hating a product. I do think that's giving constructive criticism and your true opinion, because I go out on my show every week and I do the exact same thing. I say, you know what? This was pants. This was not pants. That's how it works. All right. That's how it works. And I think about it in terms of, like, dude, like, I'm a diehard Taylor Swift fan. I never talk any shit on her. So I do kind of see it like it's different. I think it depends. But I love wrestling, but I provide constructive criticism. There's no constructive criticism to provide for Taylor because she's perfect. You get me? Like, so it's different. And I think when you think of the things that you're a fan of besides wrestling, I think you probably see that maybe you might be harsher on one thing than you are on the other.
Yeah, but I think you can also be like, you're saying that there's nothing wrong with Taylor Swift. Like, that she is perfect and every song that she's ever done is absolutely perfect. But I think that you yourself appreciate and sort of understand that, you know, that's not entirely true. But I have that about certain things that I love. Like, I'm a die-in-the-wall Sega Mega Drive kid, and I will be like, that is the greatest console ever made, even though there's a lot of duff games on it. And some of the games that I love and play are completely crap. But I will also be like, no, but it's perfect. Absolutely, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that console whatsoever. And speaking of construction as well, I've got to do some editing now, Denise, because you did a swear, didn't you? I've got to edit that, mate.
Oh, did I really?
You did, yeah. You said S word.
Oh, no. I don't even know when I said it. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh, Hollywood, Denise. Hollywood Salcedo has changed you. But that is all we've got time for. What's up for the weekend, Denise? Apart from, obviously, you know, all of your full year reactions and post shows that you're going to be doing, is it just all AEW this weekend?
This weekend is crazy. So this weekend I have like a bunch of stuff lined up that I don't know why everything just landed on the exact same day. So I'm a little bit stressed about that. And then this weekend. I have to prepare because I make like my teaching debut on Monday and Tuesday. I'm teaching like a marketing class for like students, not like a marketing class, but a class for students who want to get into the world of YouTube. So I'm doing two classes Monday and Tuesday, and I've never taught anyone anything in my life. So I'm kind of nervous, but basically like this weekend is pretty much going to be preparing for that. And after that, I don't know if I'll ever do any teaching stuff again, but at least that's going to be my life this coming Monday or Tuesday, Monday and Tuesday.
Oh, that's really cool. How exciting. Was it something that you like, was it applied for? Did someone approach you to be like, hey, Denise, can you come and show these people how to make it as a success on YouTube?
I was approached basically one of the wrestlers that knew me from like the shows that we were doing and, you know, followed me on Facebook and saw the things that I was doing. Apparently, you know, he works for like a program that is for, you know, children and to basically help them see that there's, you know, different opportunities in the career world and different things that they can do. So they wanted me to sort of, you know, put together a class to talk about YouTube and how they can possibly have a career with YouTube and make money off of YouTube. So that's going to be like my job, is basically just teaching them what they can do for that. So I'm nervous, but we'll see how it goes. So Hollywood Salcedo will not be in the classroom. It's going to be Miss Salcedo. Well, actually, no, I decided that I'm going to have the class call me Denise. I cannot be Miss Salcedo. Like it just doesn't feel right.
Miss Salcedo.
No, I sound so old. I sound like a 40, 50 year old Miss Salcedo. She's gonna smack us with a ruler.
Are you taking your husband's name when you get married, if you don't mind me asking?
No, definitely not. Oh my God, I said so many no's, but he knows this. I'm not gonna be taking his last name because I don't like his last name, and he knows this.
So,
no. I was like, you know what? If you had like a prettier last name, I would take it, but I'm not going to take it because I'm not crazy about it. Plus, I just feel like your name is your name. Like the name that you learned when you were a kid, the name that you practice, like that's your name. That's who you are. And I can't change my name because that's not who I am.
Yeah. And as you said last week, you're already fighting an uphill battle because you don't like your first name of Denise.
Yeah, exactly. So my fiance's last name is Toledo. And one time he called me Denise Toolittle. And I was like, nope, never. Hells no. And I was already not feeling that last name. But I think during that phase of like our relationship, I was too afraid to say like, hey, I don't want your last name when we get married. But now that, you know, I already got the ring, I can say I ain't going to take your last name. But he's okay with that. Obviously, he's not going to make me change that. He's a feminist.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Did your wife take your last name?
She did indeed. Yeah. She wasn't a huge fan of her original surname, but and you know, she just wanted to, she is a feminist, as am I, but she wanted to take on my last name. She thought it'd be a really nice thing for us too. So we could be the Owens together. Friends of mine who got married, she did the double barrel thing because she really loved her last name. So she took her last name and his name as well. So she just sort of double barreled them together.
Oh, okay. I see. That's what I think. I think it's like up to like everybody's opinion. Like it shouldn't have to be like, oh, well, you're getting married, so you're the woman, change your last name, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We tried to do various things to kind of shake up the system and sort of like, you know, down with the patriarchy and all this sort of stuff at our wedding. My brother was our master of ceremonies.
That's awesome.
And he did an amazing job of it as well. Plus he was free, whereas a lot of master of ceremonies are very expensive. But I wanted him to be involved in the wedding somehow, as just outside of being a part of my groomsmen. But we had him introduce us, not as Mr. and Mrs. Owen, but Mrs. and Mr. Owen. And that was our little shake of the fist of the patriarch. We're like, nah, my wife's going to be introduced first.
That is awesome. I love that. And it's something that you have to pay attention to. Like, I was like, oh, I have to make sure to tell, you know, like the person that's doing my thing, like, hey, you don't say Mr. and Mrs. Toledo. Like, you're going to introduce Denise and Sandro. And that's just how it's going to have to be. You're going to have to call us by our first name.
That's cool. Are you doing anything wrestling? Like, have you seen like the people who got married and have had like, you know, obviously, you know, rest in peace, Howard Finkel, but Howard Finkel come out and introduce people and they come out to wrestling themes. So I go, because me and my best man are big wrestling fans and I wanted to do something like that, but I knew that my wife would never go for it. Like I got my one thing, which is I don't want to wear shoes. Like I just want to wear trainers to the event. Like that was, I had two requests. One was like, I want to wear trainers. I don't want to wear shoes because I hate wearing shoes. And the other one is I want me and my groomsmen to arrive in the Ecto-1, the Ghostbusters car, and we looked into it, but it was way too expensive. Like it was far too expensive to get that one done. So I just got trainers instead.
I agree with your wife, and I'm glad she didn't let you do anything wrestling related. And I'm speaking from a fan's perspective, and no, like my fiance was like throwing some ideas out there, and I was like, no, Sandro, like this is not, no. Like we're going to have a regular classy wedding. It's going to be boring and traditional, just the way I want it. I gave him one thing, and this was it. So his one thing is, so he's having my brother is there. He's going to be his groomsman. So he's going to have one picture where they all get to wear lucha mask in their suits. So he's like, you know, looking up like, you know, families of like luchadors and somebody that he can do. So he's pretty excited about that. And I was like, all right, you get that one thing and that's it.
That is pretty rad though. That'll look really cool. Like yeah. Lucha mask in suits, pretty, that looks awesome.
Yeah, one photo, that's it.
One photo. But I don't think it's boring to have a traditional wedding. I think traditional weddings are really nice. Like it's pretty cool.
I think so too.
Like, you know that show Don't Tell the Bride?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, actually, I think you'd probably love it. It's a show here in the UK where it's a kind of a reality-based show where the bride gets sort of like, she moves out of the house for 2 weeks and the groom is given a certain amount of pounds and he has to organize a whole wedding by himself. So he has to arrange like the venue and sort of buy her dress and sort of like sort out like everything, catering and everything, her hen do and her bachelorette party. And so he has to organize the whole thing in 2 weeks with a certain budget. And at the first the show was just like, you know, it's an interesting social experiment. Can a guy do this? But then because the show became more popular, it then just be like, right, let's just try and get the wackiest people. Like, it's like, okay, it's a guy who's going to organize their wedding at a theme park. It's a person who's going to organize it at a pig farm. It's a guy who's like, previously it was just like, oh, he's going to do it down the local pub because that's the wedding that he wants, is just to go down to the local pub and just get hitched.
I am shook. I would love to see that show. I would love to see it because I can't imagine just like leaving that up to fate or letting somebody else decide my wedding day. I like bridezillas.
Yeah, I was going to say there's always that moment in the show when the bride gets sent her wedding dress and she has to open it for the first time and see the wedding dress that she's going to get married in.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. I would never be able to sign up for that.
Right. Anyway, we are going to get out of here. You're going to go get some rest, Denise, because you've got a heck of a weekend and a couple of days coming up. But there's no rest for the wicked, as Denise will tell you, because she's the hardest working person in all sports entertainment. We go back tomorrow. I believe it's Randy and Peter doing the SmackDown podcast tomorrow. I think it's them anyway. And then we'll be back on Monday with the AEW review. It'll be myself and Ollie Davis talking about AEW Full Gear. I cannot wait for the show. Hope you all enjoy it. We will see you next week. Take care, everyone. I love you. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.